Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
At Christian Apostolic Church, through the Angel Food Ministry, you can get excellent restaurant-quality food at a great low price.
This food is delicious.
Angel Food rocks. You gotta try it. You can't buy better food anywhere.
When you think about saving money while feeding your family the best food, you need to think Christian Apostolic Church and Angel Food Ministry, helping families eat better.
Mine tastes that good.
It's really good.
This service is available to all. There are no income guidelines. If you eat, you qualify.
I like it.
You've got to try it. It's really good.
CAC's Angel Food Ministry can accept payment in just about any format. You can pay by cash or money order, debit card, credit card, or food stamps card, EBT. The only format we do not accept is personal check.
The food is delicious.
The delicious menu is available on our website right now, along with an order form you can print right from the website. Check it all out at www.cac.us.com/angelfood. Again, that's cac.us.com/angelfood. Christian Apostolic Church and Angel Food Ministry, helping families eat better.
It's like they say, restaurant quality food.
Angel Food is awesome.
Now, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Voice of Truth, and we're pleased to bring you at this time another installment of A Creation Seminar by Steve Grohman. Previously on the program, we've already played a portion of this series. Steve presents his seminar live hundreds of times each year in churches, public schools, private schools, and at a variety of other special functions. And via radio and television interviews, his voice has been heard internationally addressing this crucial topic. You can visit Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. Again, that's www.creationseminar.net. And we encourage pastors, teachers, school principals, school superintendents, and any others interested in helping children learn the truth about creation and helping people to uncover the lies and deception of the religious movement known as evolution to email Steve at creation@creationseminar.net. What you're about to hear was recorded live in a church setting. The voice you'll hear is Steve Grohman. He's spent the last 14 plus years on the road full time, traveling with his wife Dana and now their son Paul as well, teaching about the crucial topic of creation versus evolution. Let's roll the tape.
And you'd have different looking people, but they're all still people. And everybody goes back to a point where they all go back to Adam and Eve. It's no big problem. It's like several other issues. Now check this out, the reality of race. There's hardly any difference in the DNA of human races. Race doesn't exist, the mantra went. The DNA inside people with different complexions and hair textures is 99.9% alike. As a matter of fact, the genetic difference between two individuals of the same race can be greater than those between individuals of different races. Folks, do you know that two black people can be genetically further apart than one black, one white? Do you know that two white people can be genetically further apart than one white, one black? We are no better because of shape of eyes or color of skin or anything of the sort. We are all still people. Everybody goes back to Adam and Eve. As a matter of fact, skin color, think of it now. How many colors of skin are there anyway? Folks, do you realize there is only one color of skin? Melanin only comes in one color. It depends how much you have or you don't have as to how light or how dark a person is. It's just genetics. I have people ask me all the time it comes up. People say, so Steve, where do you think the black people came from? I say, well, you know, a more appropriate question might be, Steve, where do you think the white people came from? Folks, Adam and Eve were pretty dark folks. They had the genetic ability to have babies all kinds of different ways. And a matter of fact, they could even have them that way at the same time. Check this out. Some hymnals have these songs, And Can It Be? This is a pretty good one. This one talks about Adam's helpless race. Folks, if you only remember one thing from the whole seminar, please remember this. There is only one race of people. It is the human race. God made Adam and Eve. Everybody that ever has been and ever will be goes back to Adam and Eve. Does not matter what they look like or when they lived. It's just, now there are different genetics and all that for diversification, but everybody goes back to the same point. We're all still people. Everybody is still in the same family tree together today. Everybody. You can't get around it. Now, give you an example of how this might work. We were doing a seminar south side of Chicago one time, and I noticed this fella sitting in the back. There were about 250 people or so, and he was sitting in the back, and I noticed him last night and tonight. Well, after tonight, I went up to this guy and I said, "Excuse me, sir, I'd like to talk to you, if I may." And he said, "Sure." I said, "Could we walk back up front?" I had a bunch of stuff out. He said, "Sure." So as we're walking back up front, we're just sort of chatting, you know, and I said, "Look, first of all, I don't know you, do I?" He said, "No, we've never met." I said, "Okay, I didn't think so. I just wanted to make sure." I said, "Look, I saw you last night and tonight. Is that it?" He said, "Yeah, I came out last night. I enjoyed it. Brought my family back tonight." I said, "Okay, just want to make sure." I said, "Listen, man, I'm going to apologize going into this thing. I may offend you. Please understand, I do not mean to offend you." And he's looking at me funny. And I said, "What are you?" He said, "Well, I'm Indian. Why?" He said, "Well, I kind of thought," I said, "Well, I thought so, but I didn't want to just assume it and be wrong. And, you know," he's looking at me funny. And I said, "I think I know something about you that you don't know I know." And now he's getting worried. I said, "Hey, don't worry about me, man." We both had black pants on. I said, "You know, I'd be willing to bet you have people in your family that are as black as our pants, don't you?" He said, "Oh yeah, I got people in my family, they're so black, they're blue." That's what he said. I said, "I thought so." I said, "I'll be willing to bet you have people in your family now that are lighter than me, don't you?" He said, "Yeah, you've got kind of an olive complexion to yourself." He said, "Yeah, you're actually kind of dark. I've got people in my family, they're a lot lighter than you." Folks, these guys have the genetic capability to have babies both ways. Again, they can even have them at the same time that way. Out of a British newspaper, twins, one is black and one is white. We are no better or worse because of color of skin, shape of eyes, or any of that stuff. Anyway, back down to the Antarctic now. Now, March 93, West Antarctic ice sheet. There was about a 43-kilometer long crack around the thing, and they're studying the thing to see if it's at risk of draining completely into the ocean, which will set off a 16-foot hike in sea level worldwide. It's not really a matter of if, it's a matter of when. If we are here long enough, it is going to happen. Back in 2000, there was a real sliver, a real thin sliver, about 20 kilometers long of this thing that actually did break off. And again, the melting, folks, is 3 to 8 times faster, and the movement and everything. In every location, this is happening. But now check it out. If the whole thing melts back, 63 million people east and Gulf Coast of the United States alone will be out of a place to live. Didn't hear much until 1997, then Antarctic meltdown. Here's the one sheet. Now there's a second one, and now there's actually a third one. The thing is falling apart. Equal melting takes place from the north and the south. It's each side. The thing is falling apart, both ends. But check this out. This is current science, December 2001. Maine. Sea level has risen by as much as 20 inches along the coast of Maine during the last 250 years. Basically, since this nation has been a nation, the coastline in Maine has risen by about 2 feet. Average, okay? Now check this out. A gradual rise in Earth temperature during the last 100 years has caused icebergs like this one to melt and add more water to the oceans. Rising temperatures have melted glaciers and polar ice caps, adding more water to the oceans. Many scientists blame global warming on an increased output of greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and blah, blah. They go and put their political slant on the thing. Now, wait a minute. Let's look at this again. Watch this. Rising temperatures have melted glaciers and polar ice caps, adding more water to the oceans. Question. Are rising temperatures melting the ice? Or is the ice melting, causing the temperature to rise? Now, folks, think about this for a second. You've got ice in this building, keep maintaining the whole, I mean, the big building, that's a lot of ice. It's going to be cold when we walk in here. You've got ice all the way to Kansas City. It's going to be cold if you're standing up against next to it. It's already cold. But the problem is this, folks. That's a lot of ice that has itself to maintain. But there's nowhere near enough ice to maintain against the atmosphere. Do you realize it's already too warm? The warming's been the problem originally. And as it's warming, it's melting and warming and melting and warming and melting and warming and melting. And it's working hand in hand. We have already crossed over the halfway mark where now there's too little ice to maintain against the temperature. And this thing is melting faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. The thing is falling apart, both sides of the thing. If the whole thing melts back, Memphis, Tennessee will be oceanfront property. You know, I mean, the shape of the continents are totally dependent upon the water level. Now, folks, let me overview this thing. Make sure everybody gets this. In the original creation, the fountains of the great deep have not broken up yet. That water's not here. The windows of heaven have not collapsed yet. That water's not here. If that water's not here, it can't be in the oceans, which means you've got shallow oceans, lots of land out there. After the flood, yes, the oceans are deeper than original, but not as deep as today. You have these huge ice caps holding a lot of water. If it's holding it in the ice, then by definition, it's not in the ocean. Shallow oceans, lots of land. As the ice melts back, the water levels rise, the shape of the continents totally look different, and everything is divided. It's not a problem. Now check this out. Didn't hear much about it, but let me just show you this. This is kind of cool because this is Scientific American, March 97, and the issue's right, but the timing is all messed up on them. You know, but check this out. Here's where we are today. Here's Florida today. There's evidence that at one time, all of this was exposed land. Prior to that, all the white was exposed land. Over the other side of the planet, here's where we are today, but there's evidence, folks, that all of this was exposed land at one time. You could live out there, cultivate the land out there. There's all sorts of evidence of tropic environment that existed all over this planet, pole to pole, all the way around, all over the place. Tons of evidence of that. Now, here's the thing, folks. If the whole thing melts back, here's where Florida will be. Ho Chi Minh City, Bangkok, they will be gone. The shape of the continents are totally dependent upon the water level. And the water level is totally dependent upon how much water is being released out of the ice as it melts back today. That's all. It's no different. In fact, even the evolutionists, I love to collect this stuff because they all talk about how the oceans used to be more shallow and the land masses are still connected together and there were bridges and shallow oceans and things could walk from one to the other and they can't figure it out. They don't have a mechanism, but I do. I've got the mechanism. That's a piece of cake. This is one of the most profound slides I have in the whole 2,400 slides I will have shown since we started Sunday morning. This is way back September 93, so it's way old, but it's still current today, as we'll see. Now check this out. Despite years of drilling in the ocean floor and the recent breakthrough described elsewhere on this page, most of our knowledge of the mantle comes from inference and increasingly from computer models, and then it describes them here. Now wait a second. Inference. You can infer whatever you want. Computer models. Folks, you can make a computer model say whatever you want. Hey, now think about it. Let's check this out now. How many of you saw these movies? You know, Toy Story, Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, Ice Age, and all that. I mean, they're cute stories and all. But listen, I don't want to ruin your day or anything or ruin your life, you know, but listen, man, you do realize those are not true stories, right? I mean, you know that, right? Folks, you know what those things are? These are computer models. Somebody that knows how to operate a computer sat down in front of the thing with a preconceived idea. He fed it the information it needed to spit out the end result of the idea he went into the project with in the first place. That's what a computer model is. You know what evolutionists are saying about computer models? You can build a computer model for an extinct animal that shows anything. You could show that T-Rex could jump over skyscrapers, but unless that model is validated by living animals, it is useless. Folks, I would dare say that. You can make a computer model say whatever you want it to say. But unless you can validate it with evidence, you've got yourself a cute little video game. And that's about the extent of it. But again, remember what they're saying about this kind of stuff. They're saying not only this stuff is considered knowledge, but it's most of our knowledge. Well, folks, if that's most of their knowledge, then I dare say they've got nothing. They've got nothing. It is absolutely amazing. And it's still current today. Look at this. Prentice Hall biology textbook used all over this country. Listen to this. Using models thought to approximate the conditions found on early Earth, scientists attempt to reconstruct the processes that gave rise to the first cellular life. That's a real definitive statement. I mean, come on. Using evidence from computer models, say this, that, and another thing. And it's no different today. Nature, January 05. Check this out. Talking about the mantle and how they have to use computer models to figure out what's going on. But the problem is there's uncertainty with all these values. There are no obvious processes to allow for this stuff. And there's indirect evidence, perhaps, or indirect thinking, at least. And it's a subject of they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. They just dream this stuff up, they put this stuff out, and people believe it because it's in a textbook. And not only that, but it's everything. How about this one? This is Science News. The issue is ET bringing life to this planet in Science News. That's incredible. Look what it says. Short of witnessing a collision firsthand, not a desirable scenario in the case of a comet or asteroid hitting the Earth, researchers need to attack these questions with simulations, such as mathematical calculations and computer models, and recreate the behavior they think comets and meteorites took when they brought life to this planet. Folks, they can make a computer model say that comets and meteorites brought life from ET to this planet if they want to. But unless that model is validated by some kind of evidence, you've got yourself a cute little video game. And that's about the extent of it. It is incredible. Similarities between the newly discovered dinosaurs from Africa and the older dinosaurs from the northern continents suggest that a land bridge or shallow seas may have connected the land masses 150 million years ago. Oh, there were land bridges and shallow seas. But folks, it was simply before the flood and immediately after. That's all. Here's another thing. Look at this one. Remember that Russia signed on to the Kyoto Agreement, right? This is incredible. February 16th, 2005 will go down in history. It's the day we begin to save the world. Yeah, this global warming is going to get better because we're going to cut the greenhouse emissions and gases and all that. Folks, now think about this for a minute. As they're signing the thing, October 2004, new scientist. For if ardent greens and out-and-out skeptics can agree on anything, it is that Kyoto will not even come close to solving the problem of climate change. As they're signing the thing, they're admitting it's not going to do anything, anyhow. Folks, it's about money. It's about control. That's all. How about June 2005? Kyoto the sequel. Better knowledge. Nah, we're going to have Kyoto part two. That's what we're going to need because part one didn't do it. Well, of course it didn't do it. Part two can't do it. Part 32 can't do it. Folks, it's incredible. But you know, folks, all of this stuff, remember, it is a belief system. The faith-based worldview system that people hold matters. We need to tear up Kyoto or make it tougher because it's not going to work the way that it is. It's all the same. Anyway, check this out. If mammoth and mastodon belong in the Ice Age, what are they doing in Mississippi, Mexico, Florida, South America, Texas? Why do they find these things in places they never claim were Ice Age places? They were not Ice Age animals. How about this one? Honey, I Shrunk the Mammoth. This one came out when Honey, I Shrunk the Kids did. I love this stuff. Watch this. Scientists have long thought that the woolly mammoths died out around 10,000 years ago at the end of the Ice Age. But recent research shows that mammoths hung on in miniature form for another 6,000 years. No one knows for sure why the mammoths survived. Ooh, teacher, pick me, pick me, pick me. Hey, way back here in the back. What do you mean no one knows why they survived? They didn't bother to ask me. I can tell them why they survived. I'll even answer the bonus question. I'll even tell them why they're in miniature form. Two of them got on the boat. It's real easy. See, before the flood, they're living hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in a perfect environment, and we don't have 3-foot dragonflies anymore. You don't have 12-foot people walking around anymore. There aren't 8-foot beavers anymore. You don't have 90-foot plum trees anymore. Everything is smaller today. That's all. I mean, it's just a nail in the coffin lid as far as I'm concerned. Yet again, here's what they're saying. Look, all these slides, how many have I shown like this? Here's what we found, but we cannot explain it. Well, folks, it's no different. I can explain it. Not a problem. Not a problem. Here's another one. The Colorado River is cut down through sedimentary rock beds 2 billion years old. Now, watch this one. This is incredible. The fantastic rock formations of the Grand Canyon have been formed by erosion. For millions of years, the Colorado River has carved a huge gorge out of the once broad, flat area of the Earth's surface. Now, wait a minute. The Colorado River has carved a huge gorge out of the once broad, flat area? Ah, come on now, wait a minute. Look, if you have enough water, enough volume, enough energy, and this stuff is racing along, literally able to cut through solid rock, one thing that racing water is not going to do is turn around and come back. You know, the Colorado River not only comes back, it comes back in on itself. You know what they say about this in the textbooks? They say, well, yeah, that does provide a puzzle. Yes, I guess that would provide quite a bit of a puzzle for these folks. Look, folks, the Colorado River could never have cut the Grand Canyon. It's not possible. Look, it would have to go uphill in some places. It comes back in on itself. How are you going to do that? And I've got a question. Where's the dirt? That's a lot of material the thing hauled out of there. Where to put the dirt? Folks, it could not have happened. Anyway, back to the Bible. This is chapter 8, where the waters assuaged, the fountains also of the deep, and the windows of heaven were stopped, the rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters returned from off the earth continually. At the end of 150 days, the waters were abated, and people keep reading, and they're not thinking about what they're reading. Folks, check this out. The fountains also of the deep, and the windows of heaven were open. The rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters returned from off the earth continually. Folks, you know, a lot of Bibles that will put in a little footnote thing there. Going and returning. Going and returning. Going. Let's do a flood play. Churches are famous for plays these days. So now don't anybody get mad at me or anything, but somebody for our flood play has to play the part of God. So that'll be the pastor. We'll put him out here on a big ladder, you know, give him a microphone, big 40-foot ladder, shaky one. Yeah. Anyway, so our part of the flood play, we're all going to come down to this end of the building, and we are going to plug up the baptistry, and we're going to turn the water on, and we are going to flood this earth. We're going to put about 4 feet of water in this building, and that'll flood the earth, okay? So now here's the thing. We're all down here. God's on the throne. The earth is flooded. All right, now remember those Psalm 104 verses I said, remember for later. At the voice of thy thunder. Okay, first of all, it says, thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The water stood above the mountain. So everything's covered, okay? No matter how tall the mountains are, it doesn't matter. They're covered. At the voice of thy thunder, God looks down and says, yeah, that's probably going to be good enough. Oh, this is going to be fun. Ready, set, go! The mountains arose. We picked this end of the building up. The valleys sink down. This stuff hastes away. Where does it go? Unto the place that thou hast founded for them. God made a low spot for that stuff to go. Now, what's it going to do when it gets there? Just sit there? Uh-oh, look out. You know what that stuff's going to do, folks? That water's going to be going and returning, going and returning, going and returning until it settles out. God's a God of detail. He even told us it took 150 days for that to take place and happen. Folks, he told us the whole bit. It's all spelled out right there. So if all that's true, you ought to see evidence of it somewhere. Well, you know what? You go to the beach after high tide, you could see a small scale evidence of that today. You know what they're saying about the Appalachian Mountains? They're saying, if you look from high enough, like space, they're saying it sure looks like these things were formed when a bunch of water kept going back and forth and bunching them up like that. You know what they say in the textbooks? They say the Rockies are tall and rugged like that. That proves they're still young. They're not eroded. They say the Appalachians are they're rounded like that because they're old and weathered away. No, the Rockies are tall like that because they're part of the mountains that arose when the valley sunk down. That's why the washout of the Grand Canyon's on the west side, and there's not one on the east. The ones on the east are the way they are because the stuff kept going and returning. You ever wonder why the coal seams are where they are? Remember all the dead stuff it takes? 10 to 12 feet of vegetation to be compacted down to get every 1 foot of coal? You ever wonder where that massive amount of material would have come from? It's just the stuff in the flood going back and forth. Compacted them. Folks, we've got the material, we've got the mechanism, we've got the timing, we've got the whole bit. It's all right there. So let's overview the whole thing. All these lifting and settling is going on. We saw that. Layers. Mountains arose, valleys sunk down, twisted. We saw that. Okay, have you ever been to the beach? You go to the beach and water comes up around your ankles and then it goes away. Whoa. The land you were standing on is now gone. Well, can you imagine on a global scale, all this stuff happens and if all that's true, we ought to find evidence of getting whacked off flat. Going and returning, bringing more on. If all that's true, you ought to find nice, neatly stacked, standing up on end, cut off flat, more on top. All over the world, nice, neatly stacked, standing up on end, cut off flat, more on top. All over the world, nice, neatly stacked, standing up on end, cut off flat, more on top. All over the world, nice, neatly stacked, standing up on end, cut off flat, more on top. Folks, do you realize all over the place the evidence is there for what God said? Hey, that might also explain this. 90-degree incline mountain. Dinosaur footprints. The dinosaur walked across the side of the mountain? I don't think so. Hey, how about this? You can see the big section, but even the smaller little pieces, you can see the ripply effect of the running water. It was laid out this way, rose later, just like the whale and the diatoms and all, might have done that too. Not a problem. They say about 240 million years, it's believed, the Colorado River is taken to cut the Grand Canyon, and it is not possible. Folks, the Colorado River could never have cut the Grand Canyon. There are places it would have to go uphill. It comes in on itself, and that is a lot of dirt it hauled away. Where did it put it? Folks, it's not possible. Now, we were out at the Grand Canyon, and I wish I would have just bought this t-shirt. I didn't buy it. I wish I would have. I took a picture, but the exposure was bad, so now it's blurry, but it's the best I have. So hopefully everybody can see this. Right here, they show this little creek bed, and they show all these strata layers, and it says 70 million years ago. And then it shows this big cutout over here, and it says today. Now, I don't know if anybody in this room caught this, but as soon as I say what I'm getting ready to say, most of you in here are going to say, yeah, you caught it and you didn't even know it. Remember when we started tonight, the Pangaea and all the different slides I showed, no two showed the same thing. Have you noticed it's the same thing with the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon? This text says 70 million years ago. The slide I showed just before this one said 249 million. I showed one that said 200 million. I showed one that said 300 million. I showed one that said 2 billion. They don't have a clue. They just, all these numbers are all different. And it's getting worse for them. Check this out. September 2000, Science News, the making of a Grand Canyon, carving this beloved hole in the ground may not have been such a long-term project. They're saying it happened kind of quick. Now, this particular article, they're saying it took about 2 million years to cut the Grand Canyon. Now, that's still way too long, but folks, do you realize the amount of time that's given up to go from 249 million down to just 2 million? That's given up a lot of ground. And it's getting worse on them. How about this one? National Geographic Kids, March 2003, talking about the Grand Canyon and how the Grand Canyon is only about 750,000 years old in most parts. Folks, they don't have a clue. They're bringing this thing down because they're realizing it's not so what we've been saying. You know, hey, let me give you an analogy of this. You can do this analogy. You can apply this analogy to anything that is uniformitarianism, where the present observable rate is the key to understanding the overall event. You can use this analogy for any of it. Let's suppose we go into the kitchen over here, and as we walk in the kitchen, we notice there is a bowl in the sink. The bowl is almost full, about 1.25 inches from the top, and there is a trickle of water coming down into it. Now, we walk in the kitchen there, and we say, hey, what's going on here? We don't know because we just all showed up together. But now we have something literally taking place right before our eyes that we could apply science to. We could observe and measure. We could measure the flow rate. We could measure the capacity. We could measure how much is in there. We could put the numbers on a calculator. We can find out that that bowl has been filling like that for 2 hours. Now all we need to do is figure out who was here 2 hours ago, and we will solve the mystery of what's going on here. Because then we can ask them, you know? I mean, you know, they didn't find out, right? Maybe not. What if just before we went into the kitchen, somebody else was in that kitchen, and they went... and they just didn't turn it off all the way. What if instead of taking 2 hours, it took about 7 seconds? Now, folks, we would be seriously flawed to believe that the observable rate that we are observing taking place that we could apply science to today has been the way the whole thing's taken place. We could believe that, we could assume that, but we cannot know that. Now, if somebody would have done that, wouldn't it be nice if they'd have left a note to tell us what they did so then we wouldn't be all messed up about it, you know? Folks, you look at the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River, wouldn't it be nice if whoever did that would have left us a note to tell us what he did so we wouldn't be in the dark about that? Folks, he told us what he did, when he did, why he did. Hey, let me ask you something. Was it a whole lot of water over a little bit of time, or was it a little bit of water over a whole lot of time? Folks, only one of those would show the effects that we actually do see. You know, think of it. We were at Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and they had a bad flood. And they didn't want to get flooded again, the locals, so what they did is they built up on the mountain, and then they built this inclined plane, they call it. This thing is really cool. You drive your car on the thing, and you go up and drive off. It's really awesome what they did. Here's a view up looking down. Here's the river that runs through their town. Here's a view down looking up. Now, folks, a river can flow through town for generation after generation after generation after generation. You could have your great-great-grandpa set you on his knee over around the corner of that bend of that river over under that big live oak tree and tell you how his great-great-grandpa set him on his knee right over there under that same tree back many years ago. That river can flow through town for generation after generation after generation without any problems at all. But you know what is a very big problem? One flood. Come through and wipe the mess out just that quick. Folks, it takes a lot of water, a very short period of time, to do the effects and the damage. And here's the dam at Johnstown, and now this is where it broke through. It's just a railroad track running through there now, you know. But in fact, even the evolutionists, they're saying some gorges carve surprisingly fast. The erosion rates are tens to hundreds.
That's about all the time we have for now, but in the future, we'll be hearing more from creation science evangelist Steve Grohman as we play for our listening audience the audio from A Creation Seminar. Listen for it next week. Also, we encourage you to log on to Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. That's www.creationseminar.net. Make a note and check it out before our next broadcast, www.creationseminar.net.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.